The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Yeah, it sounds like a poisoned air that you guys are discussing over there. These very sad stories. I mean, the guy in the biplane, I mean, even though it did kind of really end, but you have to admit that he did end it doing what he really wanted to do all his life.
True, right?
At least he had that opportunity.
It's like James Small.
Isn't it nice to know in our gender-fluid society we now even have biplanes?
Very good. Very, very, very good. You know, I thought my James Small line was great, but I think that you just took it to a completely different level. Anthony, Israeli newspapers are reporting that Trump administration is planning to host a Middle East summit at Camp David even before the upcoming September elections in Israel. I kind of feel sorry for Donald Trump because he waited for the first Israeli elections to pass before he pushed forward on this peace plan. And of course, we know what happened there. Israel back to the elections, back to the polls in September. So now he basically saying, well, I guess enough is enough, I imagine.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if he was really ready. I mean, I just wonder whether these elections, the second set of elections, is not doing him something of a favor, because it always seems as if they've still got more work to do. They're still doing things behind the scenes. And of course, there's a lot of conspiracy that's been coming out about the proposed Camp David summit, which emerged last night. And the question as to whether this Camp David summit, which, by the way, Prime Minister Netanyahu will not be invited to attend. This is a summit that is only for Arab leaders. From the outset, we understand that that's the case, similar to the Dubai meeting, which also wasn't Israeli representatives were not officially invited to attend there. But there are some people who are wondering whether, if the summit goes well and successful, and the Trump administration shows that, you know, there is potentially some sort of an opening for a peace arrangement, whether this might not help Netanyahu at the polls in September. And that's really a lot of the conspiracy that's been going around after the initial reports surfaced saying that there will be this, they call it an Israeli-Palestinian peace summit, but the Israelis won't be there. And I'm not sure if the Palestinians will be there. This is going to be the other interesting thing. So far we're having already now the second summit in the series of trying to get Israel and the Palestinians to be talking about a peace agreement. But so far, neither the Israelis nor the Palestinians have been involved. So that's a little strange. But there is a lot of uptalk about this potential summit and the fact that that Arab leaders will come along to participate. And there is even some talk about the kind of terms that President Trump might use. He's going to talk about the possibility of Jerusalem as a capital of a future state. He's not necessarily talking about a Palestinian state in those words. He's been very, very cautious about the words that he's going to be using, apparently, at this summit in Camp David. But of course, this is going to be Jared Kushner's event. He's going to be the main host of this particular summit, and I presume that Jason Greenblatt will be involved as well. And the president himself is scheduled to participate at some point or another. But we can't help thinking back to the last Camp David summit, which unfortunately didn't go so well and kind of brought to an abrupt end what was then a direct discussion between Israel and the Palestinians. So we hope that this particular summit doesn't go in the same direction. But, you know, there's just a lot of reporting about it and a lot of cynicism, I'm guessing, about the fact that neither Israel nor probably the Palestinians will be involved, and also whether this might not be an attempt by the Trump administration to somehow prop Netanyahu up and help him in the polls in the election that will take place soon after the summit is due to take place.
Fascinating indeed. Anthony, the Israeli cabinet yesterday approved construction of 700 Palestinian homes in Area C. What is the significance of this decision, and do you think that it was prompted by the international outcry that took place last week?
So the whole point, it's quite ironic that people on both sides of the divide have pronounced the death of Oslo already years and years ago, and yet we're still living with and using terms that were put together by the Oslo agreements, and Area C is a classic example, because those people who remember how the Oslo agreements were put together, they defined Area A, Area B, and Area C, where Area C is officially under Israeli security and civilian responsibility, but the Palestinian Authority provides medical and educational services to the Palestinians who live there. So the infrastructure construction is done by Israel, and Israel has full responsibility over the security of that area. And the thing about Area C is that it is home to approximately an equal number of Israelis as there are Palestinians. There are approximately, perhaps even a few more Israelis, perhaps 400,000 Israelis living in that particular Area C, whereas there are about 300,000 Palestinians. So this is a very much a mixed area under Israeli control. And it is the first time in a very, very, very long time that the Israeli government has approved the construction of homes in Area C. So I think that this is a very, very significant indeed, because it hasn't happened for so long. And of course, the Security Cabinet decided to impose some restrictions when they voted unanimously in favor of construction of these 700 homes. And when we say unanimously, I mean, that's not an insignificant term either, because we have guys like Bezalel Smotrich, who had a vote, and he also voted in favors, which is a kind of contrary to the instinct of what a lot of people might have thought would be the case. But there have been some restrictions imposed, and the restrictions are that these homes need to be built, first of all, for people who already live in Area C. So this is not about building homes so that people who currently live in areas A or B can potentially move to Area C, take up residence there. But this is really only for people who already live in Area C, and I'm not exactly sure how that is going to be policed. But the other point, of course, is that the homes need to be built within a way that is already within existing locations, Palestinian villages within Area C. So there's not going to be, there's no expansion that's going to be allowed as part of this authorization to build these homes. And of course, set off against that, there are obviously housing units that are also being built for Israelis in Area C. So this Area C is really where, if you talk about the land swaps that have been discussed so much within the peace talk agreements, the peace, you know, the talks that have happened from time to time, then this is really where the land swaps will be taking place. A lot of Area C will indeed go to a future Palestinian state, if indeed that does transpire. But the parts of Area C which are inhabited by Israelis traditionally, you know, we've mentioned them before. It's Gush Etzion, it's Maale Adumim, it's Ariel, places like that. Those parts of Area C could never be envisaged to form part of a future Palestinian state. And so that's why Israel is very much maintaining control over this area in its entirety, but also has responsibility for allowing the Palestinians in the area to live their lives and to build new homes and things like that, which is something that really hasn't taken place very much. So I think that this is a significant moment. It's not clear whether this might have been coordinated with the Americans, because we noticed that the American ambassador, David Friedman, jumped on it immediately, talking to CNN, saying that, you know, the Israeli Security Cabinet had approved the construction of these 700 homes, and this shows Israel's willingness to make the lives of the people living in the Area C a lot better, and shows how willing Israel is to come to the party in terms of discussing a possible peace arrangement between Israel and the Palestinians. So I don't know to what extent that might have been coordinated, and also whether this isn't designed, as you rightly pointed out, to set off against the decisions that have been taking place last week and to some extent this week as well, with broad construction plans being approved for Israelis living in Area C to build quite a number of additional housing units for Israelis there. So I think this is an interesting decision, and one that we haven't seen for some time.
Well, so in your view, it's more about the overall peace plan than it is about the reaction to the demolition of those homes last week.
Yeah, I don't know that this would have been a direct reaction to that demolition, because I think both of these things have been happening in parallel alongside each other already for some time. Again, you know, when we spoke about the demolition of the homes, I was clear to point out that this wasn't a decision that was made from one day to the next. This is something that's been going on in the background for a long time. It's been through the courts. It's been through all kinds of decision-making bodies until finally they got the authorization to move ahead with the demolition. And in the same way, the authorization of these additional homes has been coming through the process for some time. So I think the timing is coincidental. One can, you know, use them politically, and I'm sure that those people who like to take advantage of political capital will do so and try somehow to set them off, to make it either positive or negative. It depends on which side of the fence you happen to fall. But I don't think that we could see it as a direct response to the decision of the demolition of the homes last week.
Right, interesting indeed. The shekel yesterday reached its strongest value against the British pound, that's since 1993. What's caused the shekel to strengthen in this manner?
Well, first of all, it's not only about the shekel strengthening, sure, which of course is part of the story, but it's also to some degree about the pound falling in value with the whole Brexit thing going on in the background there. The sterling rate fell not only against the shekel, but indeed against the US dollar. So sterling is at a low over a very, very long period of time. And, you know, if we go back to October 1993, when the shekel was last at this rate against the sterling, then that was kind of a month after Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin and PLO leader Yasser Arafat shook hands on the White House to seal the Oslo Accords. That was back in October of 1993 when the shekel was at this level against the pound, which is astonishing. But be that as it may, the shekel has strengthened significantly against many currencies, and a lot of people are talking about interest rate policy, saying that, you know, the Bank of Israel seems to be very, very aggressive on the interest rate side, and there has been talk, even though interest rates are very, very low at the moment at 0.25%, there has been talk at the committee, the interest rate committee of the Bank of Israel, about increasing the interest rates. And we discussed this, I think, a few weeks ago after the last meeting of the committee, the interest rate committee, where it was made clear that there is going to be at least one interest rate rise during 2019. And the committee said that they would expect interest rates to rise twice or three times during 2020. And this is regarded as being quite aggressive in the overall economic world, even though the interest rates are so desperately low, as a result of which it seems the shekel has gone and strengthened even further. It was set at 3.50 shekel against the US dollar yesterday, and 4.35 shekel against the pound. I'm not sure what the rate is against the rand, but I know that Zanati has that at her fingertips. But the shekel is amazingly strong at the moment. And, you know, along with that come, unfortunately, some negative impacts, even though, you know, having a strong shekel sounds like a good thing to the naked ear. But in fact, it makes things very difficult for Israeli exports. It makes it very, very difficult for tourism, because when tourists come here, everything is desperately expensive. So all in all, the strong shekel at the moment is not really working in favor of the Israeli economy, even though it arises as a result of an amazingly strong economy that we find ourselves in at the moment.
Absolutely amazing. Time is about to go 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you tomorrow. Same time, same place for the Israel Report. Here's your news with Zanati.